a winter's discontent in the job market. I'm David Brancaccio. According to a survey of private employer payrolls out today, the economy added no jobs in January. Total people getting paychecks, according to the payroll company ADP, fell by just over 300,000 using a survey taken at a peak in coronavirus cases. Service sector jobs accounted for most of the loss. The government's official hiring and unemployment reports are due on Friday. Susan Schmidt is head of U.S. equities with Aviva Investors. Hi, Susan.
Good morning.
So according to this report, not only no job growth, zero, but it went down by over 300,000.
Right. On the surface, that is a big shocker and a big negative number. Remember that last month we had 770,000 jobs added to the market. But there's an explanation for this. Omicron had a big effect keeping people away from work. If you didn't get paid for work during the week, you're not counted. And so investors are going to look through this number, hoping that it's just a one-off thing and not a new trend.
Meanwhile, companies are reporting quarterly profits and losses, and things are looking fairly strong. In fact, some prominent companies seem to be thriving in this inflationary environment.
Companies are reporting earnings, and so far the numbers have largely been positive. That's good for the markets. It emphasizes that companies are figuring out how to fare and that things are improving. What's different now is there's almost certainty that the Fed will raise interest rates. That makes it harder for businesses because the cost of doing business is going to go up. Therefore, the market is back and forth whether they want to pay attention to earnings, which are good, or they're concerned about rising interest rates.
Speaking from the Chicago office, Susan Schmidt is head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The European Union just now announced it will allow natural gas and nuclear power to qualify for what's called a green classification for climate-friendly investment projects. As you know, gas is a fossil fuel that produces carbon dioxide, but not as much as, say, coal. And nuclear power doesn't produce carbon dioxide at the plant, but when it goes wrong, it gives off ionizing radiation. The BBC's Danny Eberhardt has more.
The European Union has set itself a goal of becoming climate neutral by 2050. So it matters how it signals to large-scale investors where to put their billions, what energies can be labelled as green. The problem is that views on this differ across the bloc. In France, nuclear is dominant. Gas is important for Germany as it seeks to exit coal. Four countries, Denmark, Sweden, Austria and the Netherlands, have already said including gas would be largely incompatible with the goals of the Paris Climate Agreement. And environmental campaigners have been protesting outside the Commission buildings in Brussels, holding a staged burial of the EU Green Deal. They say a flow of money to gas and nuclear would hamper investment in renewables. I'm the BBC's Danny Eberhardt for Marketplace.
Also, Google is dividing its stock. One of them will become 20 of them at a 20th of the price. Now, this doesn't matter much, but it does make the stock seem cheaper for smaller investors to buy. Inflation stinks for households, but for companies it can mean bounty. ExxonMobil's profits soared last quarter as it benefited from higher crude prices, and car companies have parlayed supply chain backlogs to their advantage. Today, General Motors said that, well, it's actually yesterday, General Motors said, profits were up 56% in 2021 as a whole. That ongoing microchip shortage made cars more expensive, and GM may have used that to be tougher with new car deals. Still, Toyota better managed its store of microchips and for the first time sold more cars than GM last year. In the U.S., the risk of flooding will go up 25% over the next 30 years because of all this. That's from a newly published study in the journal Nature Climate Change. Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports.
Flooding is already causing a lot of damage in the U.S., more than $30 billion just in 2020, the study found. Oliver Wing at the flood risk analytics firm Fathom is one of the authors, and he says historically,
it's typically more impoverished and whiter communities that bear an outsized burden of flood risks.
But he says the rise in flood risk will disproportionately affect Black communities as climate change intensifies flooding in the south and east of the country.
along coasts and in the paths of hurricanes. These are areas generally where Black communities are concentrated.
More people are also moving into flood-prone areas, which is further driving up the risk of losses. At this point, there's no amount of mitigation that will reduce flood risk in the short term, says Paul Bates at the University of Bristol, who also worked on the study.
Instead, what you have to do is make yourself more resilient to floods, not increase the risk by building in flood-prone areas.
And try to make housing that can't be moved more resilient and protected, too. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
The pandemic still has many of us working from home, where here I still am, another Groundhog Day. Oh, wait, it actually is Groundhog Day. Anyway, some companies plan to let workers stay remote. So what happens to the empty office buildings? Some want to see them turned into apartments to address a social need. From KPCC in Southern California, reporter David Wagner has the story.
Pershing Square in downtown L.A. buzzes with the sound of midday traffic. But when you walk through the doors of the Metropolitan Building and take the elevator up to Karen Tracy's 10th floor apartment,
hello.
Hi, Karen.
Suddenly everything sounds subdued.
It's much quieter. We do have more of sort of a bird's eye view of what's going on.
Built in 1913, this concrete edifice originally contained medical offices and shops. About a decade ago, it was converted into apartments. Now, with the pandemic changing how we work, some developers are working on new conversions. In Hollywood, one developer is transforming the former offices of the Central Casting Bureau into affordable housing. Karin Liljegren has worked on many similar projects. She's the founder of the architecture firm Omgivning, which specializes in adaptive reuse.
I definitely think that more and more office space will be turned to housing, and it should be.
But this approach isn't always as straightforward as it seems. In a recent report for UC Berkeley's Turner Center, housing researcher Elliot Kwan found that not all office buildings are great candidates for conversion.
Commercial buildings, especially those built in America during the 20th century, don't really vibe well with how the building needs to perform for residential uses.
Kwan says older office buildings tended to be skinny so that each room had plenty of windows to bring in fresh air. That was before the rise of air conditioning. But newer, climate-controlled offices have gotten bigger, with huge windowless interiors. Kwan says renters might not want to live in those dark, cavernous spaces.
Those types of mismatches tend to lead to pretty costly rehabilitation measures on the architectural and construction side.
And that high cost can mean high rent. Still, adaptive reuse proponents see lots of untapped potential. A recent report from a downtown LA business advocacy group found that converting just 10% of LA's office space would result in about 16,000 new homes. In Los Angeles, I'm David Wagner for Marketplace.
And before we go, here's a number, $30 trillion, that is the national debt, everything the United States of America owes as of the end of last month. It's a record high and is up about 30% from a year ago, driven by emergency spending during pandemic. Interest rates have been very low, so the cost of that debt is lower than it might have been. I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.